Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette, Part 1 for Thursday, May 28, 2026. There's a photo on the front page of the News Gazette, University of Illinois Police Department, Eyes in the Sky. And the caption, employees in the University of Illinois Police Department's Real-Time Information Center listen to police scanner chatter and skim various security feeds and other data streams. The center is staffed for about 20 hours a day. Real-time Information Center allows for immediate views, faster responses. Since the opening of the Real-Time Information Center, University of Illinois Police are working to reduce response times to the various calls they receive. The center itself is a quiet, darkened room featuring a wall of large screens displaying security footage and maps highlighting different information. During the 20 hours each day that the center is staffed, employees listen to dispatch calls and keep an eye on those maps, ready to respond to any incident the moment it unfolds. The center played a key role in the response to an October 18th incident in which a man fired shots across Green Street in Campus Town, while nearby bars were crowded early in the first minutes of a Saturday morning, hitting a person in a nearby restaurant. We were already monitoring the cameras nearby within the RTIC because of an altercation a few minutes earlier, said Justin Bowes, a retired police chief of the Rantoul Police Department, who is now a manager at the center. We were watching a group of subjects after a small fight had broken up. We actually captured the shooting on camera in real time. Thanks to one of the programs employed in the center, employees can pull up a campus map identifying the locations of every camera the department has access to. By clicking and dragging to select a relevant area, they can pull up a whole group of cameras at once, easily accessing every possible view of a given location. In the case of that October shooting, staff at the center were able to see where the alleged shooter, whom police later identified as 19-year-old Decavan Stevens of Urbana, provide photos to officers in the area. That's another function of the technology in the center. Employees can easily screenshot surveillance footage and send it straight to the officers' cars and cell phones. Jim Clark, another manager at the center, said that this could be used to send images of suspects, suspect vehicles, or missing people. Likewise, officers can use those devices to pull up a detailed map with a floor plan of every campus building. This is very beneficial for the officers and everybody else to be able to see any campus building, what cameras we might have in the building, and floor by floor what we may have, Clark said. Maps also show officer locations in real time, easily displaying who is most able to respond to any individual call and giving employees immediate access to their body and dash cameras. Calls for service likewise show up on a map. Clark said this is useful because if numerous calls originate from around the same area at around the same time, cameras can be pulled up and officers can be told to start moving that way even before dispatchers have an idea of what exactly is playing out. Not only that, but drones can be sent to observe situations that call for that view. When an employee clicks on the desired location, a special unit containing the drone on top of the building opens and the machine flies away. State law restricts what exactly police can use drones for, but Bowes demonstrated how they fly out to any selected location with eyes forward, not recording anything they fly over. Upon arrival, the drone can be used to get a bird's eye view of an ongoing situation. We can then live stream right back to the officer, Clark said. While they're potentially responding to the call for service, they can see aerial video footage of what's going on. Owner plans to shift to senior housing. Muhammad, nearly 4 years ago, Quentin McNew received approval to build a 22-lot subdivision in East Muhammad. However, when rising interest rates and supply chain difficulties led to delays, he decided to take a step back and reimagine the project. I used the time as further preparation, listening to feedback from neighboring residents and revisiting development design to better address concerns raised over the last 3 years, McNew said. One of the most common concerns in public hearings is school overcrowding. With that in mind, he decided to take a different approach and develop housing for seniors ages 55 and up, including veterans, noting that such a project would contribute to the local tax base, but not the strain on the classrooms. The Cup Village, Tin Cup Village, LLC, which is managed by McNew and Chad Gilbreth, is proposing to build up to 28 units on about 7 acres south of Tin Cup Road and west of South Fox Run Drive. Village planner Abby Heckman wrote in a report to the village's Planning and Zoning Commission. A site map provided by McNew shows 4 6-unit buildings and 1 4-unit building. He estimated that phase one, which includes a detention pond and about 16 units across 3 buildings, could potentially go in before November, pending village approval. The development will be a mix of 1 and 2-bedroom units for independent living, he said. The plan is to rent out the units, although he is considering platting the site later so that the units could be purchased as condominiums. I also want to preserve the natural character and topography of the property near Lake of the Woods, McNew said. The design includes green space buffers and a detention pond near Fox Run to help maintain privacy and create a low-density, quiet, and peaceful environment. McNew served in the Army for 11 years before resigning in 2022 after buying the Tin Cup RV Park, which is located west of the project site. This project is much more than real estate to me and bigger than me. It's a mission-driven community focused on reducing isolation and creating meaningful connection for seniors and veterans, he said. My goal is to create a place where people feel supported, valued, and a part of a community again. He's already heard from 4 RV Park residents who'd like to move into first-floor units once they're ready. 2 phases would probably be the most we'd do, based on the demand that the conversations we're having now, he said. The Planning and Zoning Commission will have a public hearing on the project at its Tuesday meeting, McNew said. According to Heckman, the commission will make a recommendation to the village board on whether to approve or deny the large-scale residential development, and the board will make the final decision. McNew expects the matter to come before the board toward the end of June. Assuming he receives approval from the village, he will have 3 years to complete the development. Retired Tilton Police Chief dies while working on road crew. Steve Cornett, who retired as Tilton Police Chief in 2017, died Wednesday after being hit by a vehicle by working as part of a road construction crew on the Interstate 5774 interchange in Champaign. A retired Tilton Police Chief who was working on road construction crew died early Wednesday morning after being hit by a vehicle on eastbound Interstate 74 near the interchange with Interstate 57. Champaign County Coroner Lori Brower said Stephen A. Cornett, 65, of Danville, was pronounced dead at 4:45 a.m. at the scene. Preliminary findings indicate that he died of blunt force injuries after being hit. Cornett, who retired as Tilton Police Chief in 2017, was a great guy. He's a family guy, Tilton Mayor Billy Weir said Wednesday. Weir said Cornett was working for Dan Ribby Trucking and taught concealed carry classes. I grew up with him, Weir said, adding they would go deer hunting and bass fishing in southern Illinois with their families. He was very likable, Weir said, adding that Cornett was also known to tell a yarn or two, and his father would call him out on his tales every once in a while. He was just an all-around good guy. Weir said it's believed Cornett was moving barriers with other workers on the road at the time of the accident. An autopsy has been scheduled, and the coroner's office and the Illinois State Police are continuing to investigate. State police initially reported the crash about 5:20 a.m. and said eastbound I-74 traffic was being diverted to I-57 at the interchange. The road was closed for about 5 hours, reopening at 10:25 a.m. The Illinois Department of Transportation shared in a Facebook post that it is working with state police on the investigation into the tragic event this morning that claimed the life of a contractor employee working on the Interstate 5774 interchange reconstruction. The department also expressed its sympathies to Chief Cornett's loved ones. Today's tragedy is an unfortunate reminder of the dangers and risks of working and traveling through work zones, IDOT officials said. If you are driving anywhere in Illinois this construction season, you will be driving through work zones. Please, when you see orange, slow down. Give the road your undivided attention and stay alert for workers and equipment. You could save a life. Teacher of the Week, Teresa Sisk, Physical Education, Shiloh Elementary, Hume. Learning through play. Teresa Sisk has spent the last 27 years teaching physical education and adaptive physical education, the last 16 of those at her current home of Shiloh Elementary in Hume. Her duties don't stop there, though Sisk also serves as athletic director and golf coach at Shiloh High School. I find my work important because, since I teach elementary school, I try to make exercise fun. Students don't really realize that we are working on physical fitness activity because they are having fun. Also, in our activities, we are working on how to get along and treat others. Students have lots of emotions during activities, and we have to learn how to appropriately deal with them. I became a teacher because in high school I had the opportunity to help the elementary students on their field days, and when they had their kickball or wiffle ball tournaments, I really liked working with the students, and that just carried over. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is, I don't teach this unit at school, but my favorite time of the year is when I take the students roller skating. I have so much fun and I love seeing how they can improve in just the short amount of time we are at the skating rink. I also have many holiday games and activities that the kids always look forward to. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when students come up and ask me, give me a hug and thank me for the activity that we just did. I keep students engaged by making things fun. Something else I'm passionate about is golf. I teach our high school golf team, and I enjoy being on the course with my students and seeing them improve. It's also nice when students who aren't on the team approach me and tell me that they play golf over the weekend. Even though they aren't on the team, I love the interaction with them. If I weren't a teacher, I think I would like to be a physical therapist. I think I would like the one-on-one and also helping people to get stronger. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Carrying on a tradition that dates to 1995, Bromley Hall will open its doors and kitchen for the Kiwanis Club of Champaign-Urbana's Pancake and Sausage Fundraising Breakfast Saturday. As construction continues on next-door Bromley Commons, a new 400-bed residence hall scheduled to open for the 27-28 school year, volunteers will cook from 7:30 to 11:30 a.m. Tickets are $7 and available at the door. Children under 3 eat for free. It's something we've always enjoyed being part of Bromley's, Ed Coyne said. It's a great opportunity to bring people together. From 9 to 11 a.m., Lauren Tate, Matt Daniels, and Ed Bond will broadcast WDWS's Illini Pella Saturday Sports Talk from the site. Among the guests, Michael LeRoy, Steve Beckett, and Don Harden. Another doozy on tap for the Kiwanis Club. The 102nd Illini Men's Basketball Banquet on September 8th at the I Hotel in Illinois Convention Center. The popular event was moved to the beginning of the school year in 2022 and allows a first visit with Brad Underwood and his team. For ticket and sponsorship information, email cukiwanis1921@gmail.com or call John Tice at 217-367-1126. Illinois State Budget. Reducing gas tax prepping for future shortfalls among sticking points. State lawmakers are days away from passing a roughly $56 billion fiscal year 2027 budget, but many are still fighting to have their priorities included as negotiations near the end. Republicans want to reduce the size of the budget and lower taxes, while some Democrats are seeking more taxes on businesses and billionaires. Others are looking to maintain state programs, fearing future budget holes and social service cuts in the coming years. The budget became more complicated earlier this month when analysts for the General Assembly and Governor J.B. Pritzker's budget office lowered revenue projections for the upcoming fiscal year that begins July 1st. The revisions by the governor's office revealed $149 million gap between what Pritzker proposed spending and the amount of revenue the state will have to support it. And that includes $728 million in new taxes in revenue change proposed by the governor. Though the clock is ticking toward the Sunday night deadline, negotiations over the final product are still happening behind the scenes. When we look at Springfield, a week can be a month and a day can be a week, says Senator Robert Peters, Democrat, Chicago, said at a news conference Wednesday. And so a lot can happen and a lot of conversations can happen, but I can say, you know, my guess that this is going to be a tight vote and a tight conversation. Gas tax. Gas prices have topped $5 per gallon in parts of the state, and some lawmakers are calling for a temporary reduction in the fuel tax to provide relief to drivers. Pritzker suggested Tuesday that lawmakers could suspend the automatic gas tax increase of about 2 cents per gallon that happens annually on July 1st. We for sure should be looking at what we can do to diminish the impact of high gas prices, Pritzker told reporters during a visit to Champaign. He cautioned that lawmakers must consider how pausing the increase would affect road construction, which is funded by the tax. But he said we have enough here so that we can make some sort of pause. The road fund had about $4.2 billion as of Wednesday, according to the comptroller's office. Lawmakers also suspended the inflationary increase to the gas tax in 2022 for 6 months during a period of high inflation. Relief for drivers would likely be minimal. However, the tax is set to increase by less than 2 cents per gallon on July 1st to about 50 cents per gallon, according to the Department of Revenue. Republicans are pushing for suspending the sales tax on gas, which they argue amounts to double taxation at the pump when combined with the gas tax and will provide greater relief. The governor has a real initiative that he could show. I care about the cause by freezing the sales tax, and he hasn't done that yet, House Republican Tony McCombie, Republican Savannah, told Capital News Illinois. McCombie suggested the large balance in the road fund should be used to fund public transportation if the sales tax on gas is suspended. That sales tax largely funds public transportation beginning this year and suggested significant budget gaps for that service. If there's an account in government that has exceeded their expectations, the money that should go back to taxpayers, and this is a way for that to happen, she said. Digital ad tax. But many Democrats want to raise upwards of $4 billion in new revenue through tax hikes and eliminating tax credits for job creation. One idea that nearly made it into the budget last year and could have momentum this year is a tax on businesses' digital advertising revenue that proponents say would generate more than $700 million. The business leaders warn such a tax will hurt small businesses, which rely on digital advertising to reach consumers. We understand the need to close budget gaps, but a digital ad tax will make it harder and more expensive for businesses to use digital and social media ads to find customers, sell products, and grow their companies, said Jack Lavin, CEO of her Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce, of the Chicagoland Chamber of Commerce. The big tech companies aren't the ones who are going to be hurt by this. Senate Bill 315, Measure on AI Accountability, heads to governor's desk. Following in the footsteps of New York and California, Illinois state lawmakers passed a bill Wednesday that seeks to increase transparency and accountability among the largest and most capable artificial intelligence models. Senate Bill 315 passed unanimously in the House on Wednesday and now heads to the governor for consideration. Legislators modeled the bill after laws passed in 2025 in New York and California, hoping to further a national standard they say is lacking at the federal level. This legislation enacts critical protections against the most catastrophic risks that advanced AI systems pose to public safety, said State Representative Daniel Dedek, Democrat, Buffalo Grove, who sponsored the bill in the House. Artificial intelligence is among the most significant technological developments of modern time. It has the potential to drastically improve the quality of life of people throughout the world, but only if deployed and developed responsibly. SB315 is targeted towards the most capable models developed by the largest companies through its thresholds, $500 million in revenue, and a massive computing measurement. OpenAI and Anthropic both support the bill throughout its process. All these models grow more powerful. This kind of enforceable accountability matters more than ever, Cesar Fernandez, Anthropic's head of the U.S. state and local government relations, said in a statement Wednesday. Illinois lawmakers have set a new standard, and we hope other states and the federal government build on their dedication to AI safety. State Senator Mary Edley Allen, Democrat, Libertyville, who sponsored the bill in the Senate, compared the technology to the Wild Wild West and said lawmakers can't take the same approach as they did with social media, an approach that was minimal until recently. This is not about stopping innovation, but rather about balancing the great promise of AI with its potential harms, Edley Allen said while introducing the bill in committee on May 13th. The Senate approved the bill last week by a vote of 52-5. The bill would require developers to create and publish a transparency framework explaining how their company applies industry standards, measures model capabilities and chance of catastrophic risk, and identifies and responds to safety incidents. Developers would also be required to employ third-party auditors to ensure compliance with the framework. A provision that is still a point of contention for some industry stakeholders, including TechNet, a coalition of tech executives across the industry. We remain concerned that Illinois would effectively be requiring private actors to make highly subjective determinations requiring AI safety compliance without established national standards, certifications, or clear regulatory guardrails, TechNet representative Nina Linero said in committee May 20th. Advocates like Secure AI, a nonprofit seeking meaningful AI regulations, supported the third-party requirement. Dedek said he had conversations with House legal staff and the AI working group of lawmakers, conducted research to see if there are companies that can effectively conduct those audits. Given the fact that there is already a developing, robust ecosystem of these small boutique firms and also the large international accounting firms that have the capabilities to perform these audits, we were comfortable keeping it in the bill, Dedek said. Durbin warns of deep divisions in farewell address. Retiring U.S. Senator reflected on decades in public office. As he closed his address before members of the Illinois General Assembly and Governor J.B. Pritzker on Wednesday at the Illinois Capitol, U.S. Senator Dick Durbin evoked the words of another favorite son of Springfield. Abraham Lincoln, in the House Divided speech that he gave here in Springfield, gave a grim warning that the divisions in America over the issue slavery could destroy our nation. The 81-year-old from the days of the Illinois House Chamber said, "We see similar divisions today. The challenge we face in the days ahead could be just as serious," Durbin said, referring in efforts to undermine democratic norms like accepting the outcomes of elections. "I hope that those of us blessed to live in this land of Lincoln will remember his warnings in 1858 and his counsel to those who led this nation in our time, who lead this nation in our time." Durbin delivered what was billed as a farewell address, reflecting on his record in office while urging state lawmakers to pick up the torch for the causes he championed. The East St. Louis native will retire next year after 30 years in the Senate, most of it spent as the chamber's influential number two Democrat. He has been a fixture in Illinois politics for more than a half century. From interning for U.S. Senator Paul Douglas while attending Georgetown University to serve in the U.S. House before his election in 1996 to the Senate seat Douglas once held. Durbin never served in state elected office, losing a bid for Illinois Senate by less than 2 percentage points in 1976 and for lieutenant governor in a landslide in 1978. But he did work in the state capitol, serving as parliamentarian of the Illinois Senate in the 1970s. a bridge across generations. And his influence extends further than that. More than 3,000 people have worked in Durbin's office, including State Representative Cam Buckner, Democrat Chicago, and State Senator Mike Simmons, Democrat Chicago. Several women in the legislature are alumni of the Illinois Women in Leadership Training Academy, a group co-founded by Durbin's wife, Loretta, for which he provided seed money. Think about the arc of history this man has lived and helped lead, Buckner said. He interned for Paul Douglas in the 1960s. He worked for Paul Simon. He served with Carol Moseley Braun. He later helped guide and mentor Barack Obama. This is not just a resume. This is a bridge across generations of Illinois leadership. Reflecting the infinite game of public policy making, Durbin highlighted some of his top legislative accomplishments while acknowledging the work that remains. He recalled his challenge to Big Tobacco in the 1980s, referring to it as the most powerful lobby on Capitol Hill. He remembered catching a last-minute flight that required him to sit in a plane smoking section. "I said, isn't there something you can do?" he recalled asking a gate agent. She said, "No, but Congressman, there's something you can do." So I got on the plane, sat in that center seat between two chain-smoking sumo wrestlers. What did I say? There's got to be a better way. Durbin subsequently introduced legislation that banned smoking on commercial airline flights, eventually getting it passed in 1988. He also touted legislation banning the marketing of tobacco products to children, which he credited with a massive drop in the number of high school students smoking. "Before I rest on my laurels, I will tell you that, unfortunately, cigarettes have been replaced by vaping," Durbin said, urging lawmakers to do something about it at the state level. Proud to be the son of an immigrant, Durbin, whose mom was an immigrant from Lithuania, kept her naturalization certification for decades and displayed it in the credenza behind his desk in his office at the U.S. Capitol. He said he wanted people to know he's proud to be the son of an immigrant. Throughout his tenure, Durbin has been the chief champion of proposed legislation that would grant legal status to undocumented people brought to the United States as children. Known as the DREAM Act, the legislation has been introduced several times but has never passed both houses of Congress. Uganda closes border with Congo, where suspected cases of rare type are surging. Uganda on Wednesday ordered the closure of its border with Congo, where suspected cases of a rare type of Ebola are surging, and as cases have been confirmed at home after Ugandan health workers were exposed to the disease from Congolese patients. The measure, which goes against the guidance by the World Health Organization, underscores growing fears of contagion in East Africa from Bundibugyo, a rare type of the Ebola virus that is behind this outbreak and that has no approved medicines or vaccine. Like Congo, Uganda has faced Ebola outbreaks in the past. A local Ugandan task force made the decision on the border closure. The Ugandan health workers were exposed to the virus by Congolese patients who had crossed the border before the outbreak was declared in eastern Congo on May 15th. Border crossings will be authorized only in emergency cases, including for the outbreak response, cargo, or security reasons. Dr. Diana Otwine of the Ugandan Ministry of Health told journalists, "Anyone entering from Congo under emergency circumstances will be taken into mandatory isolation for 21 days. Tracing and isolating Ebola contacts is seen as key to stopping the spread of the disease, which usually manifests as hemorrhagic fever." This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette, Part 1, for Thursday, May 28, 2026. Please stay tuned for Part 2.